On behalf of Antoine Reed, may it please the Court. I'd like to focus my argument today on the lack of probable cause in this case and on the insufficiency of the evidence. As for the Rule 404B argument, the record more or less speaks for itself. So unless this Court has any questions, I'd like to rest on my briefs for that issue. This case started with a vague, uncorroborated tip from a confidential informant of unknown reliability. This was a bare-bones, fill-in-the-blank type warrant that didn't support probable cause. 5 years ago in Garcia, this Court cautioned the Milwaukee Police Department and the court commissioner in that county by saying it was troubled by these fill-in-the-blank type warrants, that it was a very close call whether the warrant itself established probable cause, but that ultimately good faith would apply in that case.
If he had enough of a presence at the house to have standing to object to the search warrant, then why is his connection to the house insufficient to establish control over the guns and the drugs that were found there?
I believe there are two separate questions, Your Honor, with regard to the insufficiency of the evidence at trial. That was a trial question that wasn't part of the motion to suppress issue. The warrant listed his name on there. It said that he lived there. They found him there, which gives him standing to challenge that warrant. But they are two separate issues. Going back to the warrant for a moment, what we have in the warrant itself are conclusory statements. The CI is reliable. The CI is credible. Reed lives in and controls the residence. Going back to your question, Your Honor, what's missing is the because, though. How do we know the CI is credible? How do we know that the CI is reliable? We don't have that information here. And by not providing that information, the officer was essentially assuming the role of the court commissioner. Those are conclusions that the court commissioner should be drawing based on facts in the warrant that just weren't there. At some point, the police need to be deterred from continuing to create warrants like this. At some point, good faith runs out. And it's our position that good faith ran out here.
Should the CI have been present? Is that what you're saying?
Excuse me, I didn't quite hear.
Present during the application for the search.
That's certainly one factor that should be considered. In certain cases that this Court has decided in the past, actually, Your Honor, I'm not sure that. Are you saying?
Well, I'm talking about what more was needed as far as whether or not the CI is somebody you can. Because he did say that they'd used him before. Obviously, he had his own axe to grind. He's trying to cooperate in order to diminish his own exposure. But
well,
what is it that you need, you think, and what more is needed as far as you're concerned?
We don't know, Your Honor, if he had his own axe to grind, because we don't know who he is, and nothing was said about how he knows anything about heroin, how he knows Reed, how he knows what his relationship was with Reed, so we don't know if he had an axe to grind, and that's part of the problem here, that those details are left out. So to the extent that the warrant could have been challenged on those grounds in a Franks hearing or something like that, that couldn't have been done because we don't have enough information to go on. Going back to Your Honor's question, what would have been important to know is what happened during the transaction itself. The CI provided information in the past that led to one single warrant, one instance of cooperation with the police in the past. Did that lead to an arrest? Did that lead, or was the warrant tossed in that case because there wasn't probable cause? One arrest is just not enough to establish credibility here, especially where we know absolutely nothing about what the CI was doing at the house, what actually happened in the transaction. All these minor details are very, very important, and they're just lacking here. And the officer was unreasonable in thinking that by submitting this affidavit without the necessary details, that was enough to support probable cause here. And that takes it outside the realm of good faith. And what also takes it outside of the realm of good faith is the fact that officers actually had information that they didn't include in the affidavit itself, that surveillance was going on. And why it's important that was included is because during that surveillance, they saw Reed at the residence. But they saw him leaving and coming back to the residence. They didn't see him conducting any drug deals. They didn't see him doing anything illegal while they were conducting surveillance. That should have been in the affidavit so that the court commissioner, acting in his neutral, detached role, could have made a well-informed decision on whether there was probable cause here, but it wasn't included. I'd like to move on to the sufficiency of the evidence, unless Your Honors have questions with regard to the warrant. This was a constructive possession case. The drugs and the guns and everything, yes, they were found in the house. It certainly supported a finding that somebody with connections to the house was distributing drugs and possessing guns from within that house. But the evidence is insufficient to support a finding that Reed knowingly had the power and intention to exercise dominion and control over the drugs and guns found in the residence. So yes, he was there. That's certainly true. And he was found there when the warrant was executed, and he may have had some tie to the residence. And he certainly did in the past, as he admitted to the officers. But that doesn't establish the necessary nexus here in a constructive possession case. This is not a case of exclusive residency. Vera Sims was in the home at the time the warrant was executed. She testified that there were five or more other people living in the home at the time. This was not an exclusive residency case where it could be said that just because Reed owned the residence, that everything in the residence also belonged to him. That's not the case here. It's unreasonable to draw the inference that from old, relatively unimportant mail, a few photographs in a home, that Reed was in the home and had the power and intention to exercise dominion and control over the guns and the drugs in the home. And it's important that they weren't just scattered about the home, obvious to Reed when he was in it. These drugs and guns were hidden, or in a closet, or in a cabinet, or in the basement. As for the phone calls that the government relies on heavily in their briefs, this was vague, speculative testimony that, again, was conclusory, but the officers who testified did not provide any sort of background information on why they formed the opinion that in those phone calls drug dealing was occurring. They provided no sort of testimony to indicate, well, in other phone calls in the past we've seen this, and that's why we're basing our that's what we're basing our conclusion on, and now here's what's happening in this case. That didn't occur at all. Again, the surveillance. Well, I'd like to go back to the phone calls for a moment. Those phone calls took place over a 1 or 2 day period. There were 6 phone calls. He was in prison jail for 1 year before trial. So 6 phone calls over the course of a year really isn't saying much. And I'd also like to point out those phone calls are discussed at the trial between pages 75 and 85 in the appendix. What you'll note there is the sort of suggestive questioning that's going on. Officer, this is what was said, correct? And then the officer's reply is generally, well, probably, maybe, I think so. Can I hear it again? I can't really understand what's happening. This is not conclusive testimony that there was any sort of drug dealing going on during the phone calls.
Oh, but yeah, but if you read them, those jailhouse conversations sound like someone quite boldly setting up drug sales from jail using Ms. Sims as the seller. So
I disagree with Your Honor's conclusion on that point. I don't think it's as clear, and to the extent that it might be that, the officers weren't able to say with any sort of certainty that that is what was going on. They could have investigated it further. They could have gone to Sims, seen what she saw what she was doing, but that's not what happened. They didn't do any further investigation. They just sort of relied on the government's interpretation of what was going on in the phone calls that was sort of fed to the officers, and then the officers confirmed, yes, that's why. But at no point did the officer say, that's why, and here's why I came to that conclusion, because I know that this has happened in the past. I know that come through, my girl's going to come through means my girl's going to deal heroin for me. That they didn't ever make, you know, that sort of a connection based on any sort of evidence. What's most important, though, is what's missing. There were no personal items. There were no typical clothing items of Reed's found at the residence. But most importantly, it's clear from the evidence.
Correspondence that's pretty recent. I mean, you know, within the month, within the week.
It is within the month, but if you look at what the correspondence actually is, Your Honor, it's sort of junk mail. Lawyers sending out, well, I would like to represent you because you got this traffic citation, or things of that nature that are relatively unimportant to read. And what's the most important point
to about the, particularly, I find relevant the appointment card from the parole agent under the mattress reflecting a home visit for the 23rd of February, which is, what, two and a half weeks before?
Her testimony, though, Your Honor, was that she actually performed the home visit at a different residence. So, yes, her card was there. The card was actually given, her testimony was that the card was given to Reed at a prior appointment earlier that month. And so to the extent that it might establish that Reed was there for a period of time to drop off this card at Sims's house, it certainly doesn't say that he was there dealing drugs in the week before the search warrant was executed or the day the search warrant was executed, that those were his drugs there. It might have shown that he was there in the past, that he stopped by, that he dropped off mail, but that's not something that he needed to follow up on. That's not something that was still important to him on March 11th when the search warrant was executed. So I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lennon. Ms. Wesley?
Good afternoon. With regard to whether or not the warrant was supported by probable cause, I think the precedents in this circuit clearly tell us that this warrant was. In Garcia and both McIntyre, the information included in those affidavits was very similar to the information included in the affidavit in this particular case. And in both instances, the court found that there was probable cause, albeit narrowly in Garcia.
Does Reed have standing to object to the warrant if he claims he was just at the house to let the dogs out and to give someone a ride? I'm asking you the same question. Why did the government not argue that he couldn't object to a warrant when he denied any significant ties to the house?
Certainly, if the defendant did not assert that he lived at that particular residence, he wouldn't have standing. And to the extent that the government didn't argue that issue, it was missed, Your Honor. But I think, be that as it may, that the warrant itself was supported by probable cause based on the precedents, in particular Garcia and McIntyre. And even if the court doesn't reach that issue, certainly the warrant, the officers acted in good faith in obtaining the warrant and looking at a number of different cases, including Garcia, Peck, as well as Miller.
But what about Miller? Because the use of the prior conviction in this case was virtually identical to the use of the prior conviction in Miller, where we reversed.
I agree, but I don't believe that the circumstances were identical. In this case, we had a court trial. In Miller, it was a jury trial. In Miller, also, the prior conviction played prominently in the evidence in the case, and that was not the case before the district court in the trial of Mr. Reed. In fact, that evidence was used minimally. The testimony at trial regarding the 404B evidence in the form of the prior conviction was limited. Not only that, but the government argued that it used that evidence sparingly in its post-trial memorandum to the court. Furthermore, in Miller, that evidence was used primarily and solely to prove intent, and that wasn't the instance in this case. In this case, the evidence was introduced and used to show that the defendant, Mr. Reed, had knowledge of drug trafficking and the distribution and packaging of drugs. So I think that certainly Miller is distinguishable from the case at bar.
What evidence ties him to the drugs or guns that were found outside the bedroom? In other words, what evidence did the government offer to show that it was Reed, not any of those other adults, in the house.
Your Honor, I suppose the court could delve into that area, but I think that you don't need to. In this case, the defendant was charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm, as well as possessing a firearm in furtherance of drug trafficking activity. And in that regard, the government had to prove that the defendant possessed a firearm, not the means by which he committed that crime. In other words, the government didn't have to prove that the defendant used each of the three firearms in this case to find beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty of both the felon in possession of firearm as well as the possession and furtherance of the drug trafficking. In this case, there was substantial evidence to show that the defendant had ties to both the firearm and the drugs in the bedroom, and that is sufficient to carry the convictions against Mr. Reed on all three counts. Are there additional questions or concerns from the court?
Apparently not.
Apparently not. All right. Thank you. I would ask that the court, with regard to the 404B argument, I would rely on my brief, but I would also emphasize just briefly that the district court did not rely on that evidence to show intent. Instead, the district court in its written decision indicated that, you know, the intent was there, that the drugs were there, their distribution quantity, and furthermore, that there were other items in the home that were indicative of distribution. And not only that, but that, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought for a moment. I know you're looking at the clock, and I'm trying to make my train as well.
Take your time. First of all, you have the time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's your time.
But that the district court really used the evidence with regard to the prior conviction to show that the defendant had knowledge of what was going on in the home, not necessarily an intent to distribute. So, and with that, I rely on my briefs and ask that you confirm the convictions for Mr. Reed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wesley. Ms. Lennon, your time had expired, but you may have an additional 2 minutes.
Just because the standing issue arose, and I'm not sure that I was able to provide a sufficient answer to your question, Judge Rovner, if you'd like additional briefing, I'd be happy to provide it. Okay. Thank you. I just to briefly touch on the 404B evidence issue, the government proffered the evidence of Reed's prior conviction, and not just the fact of his prior conviction, but all the details of his prior conviction, to show evidence of intent, just like Your Honors referred to Miller. And that was the main focus of their argument. And so
it's a bench trial, right?
Yeah. It is a bench trial, Your Honor.
How does the judge who has to consider the objection prejudice himself in this case?
I think it's clear from his written verdict, Your Honor, that this evidence was considered, and it was considered in a way that does not comport with 404B. And if the evidence should have been excluded originally. It should never have come in under 404B. Because it's really just insufficient to say, well, it's going to prove knowledge, intent, absence of mistake, but then not show how. How does it prove that? How does it show that? But to the extent that the evidence came in, it was offered, the judge heard it, and then the judge relied on it, which is clear from the written verdict. So we ask that, at the least, this be reversed for a new trial on the evidence issue. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.